Today is April 14th, 2008. My name is Brian Clark. I'm interviewing Michael A. Franklin, whose current address is 2301 Massachusetts Avenue, Northwest in Roanoke. And he grew up in the neighborhood Southwest in West End. And this is for the Roanoke Public Library's Neighborhood Oral History Initiative. And Mr. Franklin, you were just telling me you're 55 years old. You've lived in Roanoke all your life, except for where did you go to school?
That's correct. I went to school here in the city of Roanoke. Started at Loudoun Elementary School, which no longer exists, on Loudoun Avenue in Northwest Roanoke City. It's the Loudoun Park right now. Our other elementary school was in the third grade. I went 2 years to Loudoun in the third grade. I went to Lincoln Terrace, which was a new school at the time. I went there for 1 year. That was the first year that Hurt Park Elementary School was built. The school was, we had too many students and not enough class space. That's why I was bused to Lincoln Terrace. And in the fourth grade and fifth grade, I came back to Hurt Park for 2 years and then went to Harrison Elementary School for 1 year in the sixth grade, and that was my segregated education. The schools were segregated during that time, and that was the first 6 years of my public education.
So that was up until 54, is that correct?
64, 65, somewhere.
Okay, so you were in segregated schooling until 64, 65.
In the seventh grade, we went to integrated schools at Robert E. Lee Junior High School. It's where the Pulf Federal Building is right now.
Okay.
And to give you some, you know, kind of some indication, and there were no school buses. We walked to school from this area, this neighborhood here, down to Lee Junior.
And that's probably about a mile and a half?
Ooh, a mile and a half.
Something like
give
that?
Give or take.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. And did you attend high school?
Yes, I attended high school at Jefferson Senior down, it's Jefferson Center now. And when I was in the ninth grade at Robert E. Lee Junior High School, I was fortunate enough to play basketball for the junior varsity and varsity team in 1968-69.
Mm-hmm. What position did you play?
I played center.
Did you?
Yes.
I could kind of guess. I get those questions too. You're rather tall.
But it was an experience, you know, going to, from segregated schools to integrated schools and the challenges of the day, you know, and it was a balance, you know, just to understand about the transition and the change and just dealing with it. And by being a part of a successful basketball program helped us really achieve. And plus, my mother really played a major role in shaping my life, plus my siblings. I guess I'll speak for my siblings, you know, because a lot of them, you know, they, you know, are not as popular as I was as far as playing basketball. They've gained a lot of notoriety and, you know, it opened a lot of doors for different opportunities and being successful and humble with.
With that basketball team, when you played, was that an integrated team?
The basketball is in the sixth grade. The Salvation Army had the first integrated basketball, satellite basketball team here in the Roanoke Valley, where we had five black players and five white players, and we played at the Salvation Army on Salem Avenue, and that was the first team, to my knowledge, that had actual teams, you know, here in the city of Roanoke, and we played the games at Woodrow Wilson. And this was, God, like 1960. I was 12 at the time, 12, 13 at the time. So.
And you were on that team?
Yes, I was on the team.
What was that experience like? Was that your first experience with segregation? I mean, desegregation?
Integration. Well, yeah, the Salvation Army opened up to... called the Boys Club, where boys and girls went, and they kind of opened the doors up, you know, up to the kids in the community, And we just went in and started playing and participating, and I guess the rest is history. Mm-hmm. You know, and I guess you notice it, but once you take a part, once you are taking a part of it and being a part of it, you just accept it and move, mm-hmm. and move forward right on with it.
What was the most maybe noticeable or the most prominent memory that stands out in your mind that first day going into school when it was integrated?
Oh God. I guess to look back, I guess I can't really remember the first day, mm-hmm. but I guess what you remember is occasions and situations where you are part, and then people notice a change. You know, like if you're the only black person, then people notice you being the only black person. Or if you're the only white person with the blacks, then people notice, and then it kind of stood it out, and then. He kind of embraced it, you know. Mm-hmm. We're all a part of a team, and it was fun, a lot of fun, you know. But it was the challenges, as you look back at it, a lot of fun memories.
Like what? Any that stand out right now?
Oh God,
just a couple.
Oh God, I mean, I guess to go in places like Danville and Halifax with the Confederate flags. And dealing with the Confederate flag issues at the time, and guys wanting to go in the stands and take the flag, you know, like it'd be like the whole stands be all white students, and then they have a Confederate flag in the middle of, and guys, a couple of guys on the team want to go up in the stand and take the flag. You know, we said, "No, man, we didn't play a game. We didn't take no flag." You know, and see, guys got heated, and then keeping people under control,
yeah.
and sticking with the mission at hand versus being distracted. And it was a lot of distractions and sticking to the task and achieving your goals. Those are the fun, what I think are the fun memories, mm-hmm. as I look back at it, mm-hmm. to look past distractions and reap the benefits of, hey, the prize is not there, the prize is here. Mm-hmm. And then keeping your eye on the prize and being successful and kind of like laughing all the way to the bank in the process. You know, I mean, you say, and then we think, ease the money. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I look back, you know, the only jewelry I wear is jewelry that's been given to me for playing basketball. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten it at every level, you know, from high school, to college, to playing international basketball. I've been fortunate to be one person's trash to another person's treasure. Mm-hmm. And I say that right there, you know, in 1971, when I graduated from high school, I was the best basketball player in the state of Virginia.
No kidding.
I mean, and one of the best basketball players, you know, in the country. And to not be good enough for certain schools until 2 years later. Mm-hmm. And my mother said, if you wasn't good enough in 71, you were not good enough in 73. So the University of Cincinnati gave you an opportunity to get an education. And we are a family of our word. And say, you're not going, just because of your basketball ability, you want to transfer back to Blacksburg. No, you stay in Cincinnati because they gave you a chance to get an education. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you're going to stay. And you have no say-so in the matter. And that's pretty much how...
I was going to ask, how'd you feel about that?
Well, I wanted to transfer it back, but yet, when it was brought to my attention about how things was and how things are, mm-hmm. and someone give you a chance to get education, it don't come cheap. And today, I didn't pay anything. And to be an out-of-state student at the University of Cincinnati in 1975, from 71 to 75, would have cost about $60,000 being an out-of-state student. Mm-hmm. The same education today would cost about $140,000 for 4 years, and to put a value on that. So anytime today when I have to pay money for something, I say deduct it from that $135,000 education that you got on your basketball ability. Mm-hmm. And to always put a value on the money you didn't pay, you still deduct it, and that way, the education didn't come cheap. you're still putting a value on it, the knowledge you have for a better life. And to try and get kids to understand about the standards of learning, because I have a lot of ability, a lot of stories to share for kids for opportunity, and to pick kids who want a better life, you can tell them how to get it. Kids who don't want a better life, you can tell them how, if you don't want a better life, you can go over here and get it right here. You ain't got to mess this person's life up in the process. You can walk right over here and get it. Or you want a terrible life, you walk right over here and get it. You ain't got to take 10 people with you. And this, I mean, what you mean by that? I say, what you're doing, you're influencing this person who is easily influenced. And it's coaching. They asked me to coach basketball at Patrick Henry High School for one season in 1984-85. Mm-hmm. It lasted for 16 years. You know, two state championships. We were the first team. Coach Dean took two teams to Hawaii, and I was his assistant coach. Mm-hmm. But yet, like one thing people say, how you handle people. No, you don't handle people. You deal with people. Because you handle animals. Red Auerbach with the Boston Celtics, he put it in perspective. He was one of the coaches that talked about handling people and dealing with people. You handle animals and you deal with people. So if I'm incarcerated, I'm being handled. If I'm in jail, I'm being handled. But right now, we're dealing with each other. And you have a choice in the state of Virginia. And I took the state flag dealing with kids. And we trying to work on the standards of learning. And so we start with the flag. What do it mean? Nobody really know. And the simple solution I came up with was to stand right in blue or to live wrong in red on the ground. Mm-hmm. And you got a choice. We fly this flag over our state. And a lot of people I work with the Department of Juvenile Justice call me stupid for saying it and trying to put it into practice. I said, well, this is a challenge that I see, because if I sit down with a kid one-on-one and ask, how you want to live? Just think about it and show them that emblem. I said, how you want it? Right standing or wrong on the ground? We fly this flag over our state. And everybody look at it and have no idea what it means. It's just something blue that's hanging in the air versus the, hey, really? Everything dealing with the state have that emblem on it. And so as we teach our kids to really look at it and take it serious during the educational process, we send a stronger message. When you do wrong, there's consequences associated with it. When you do right, it's rewards associated with it. Sometimes the rewards are not as great as you might expect. But it takes time. It's the reward. And to just share the ups and downs of positive and negative experiences. Sometimes a negative experience is some of the greatest experiences you'll ever have. Because, you know, hey, it can't get no worse than this. It can only get better. And I always say, I always know what the worst is that can happen to me and move forward. Than to not know, I'd rather lose first. That first season in that integrated team, we beat the first game and lost all the rest of
them. Definitely like to get switched, don't you?
I guess to look back at it, it was a humbling experience, because we thought we was world beaters. I think we scored like 12 points. And the team that we played against, they scored like 6. And the other teams just beat our brains out. You know, they was just so much more, you know, well, we were like 12 years old. And if teams been playing for like 3 or 4 years against first-year players, you know, it's just, no matter how big you are, if you don't have the skills, you're just not going to excel. And it's,
that's funny.
It's heartwarming. You know, I got so many heartwarming experiences with that basketball. And I had an experience once doing segregation. And it was challenging, because it was a guy that I went to junior high school with that was in another neighborhood. And I was like a eighth grader playing with a ninth grade team. In one of the counties, and the county had a reputation for being kind of not racially friendly to black people, and so it was two black guys on the team, and we went to this county to play a game, and some of the things that were said wasn't really from the people from the county, because the one white guy that was saying all the stuff, I recognized him from my junior high school. And what I did, I was just looking. I just turned, just look at you. You get eye contact, like, just look at you. Look square in the eye. Just look at you. And just look at you, you know, just stir people down. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, they would change. And then after it was over with, I would see them, and I'd walk up to them face to face. I said, "Now, could you repeat that?" And to this day, nobody never have. Versus to say it one way versus say it another. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I call it false courage to live and deal with situations. If you put God first in everything you do, it's a reward for you. To be fearing of only of God, then you live a better life. You see, I'm a pretty big guy, you know. I ain't never been injured, no broken bones, you know. And I played basketball at the University of Cincinnati. And to be fortunate enough I never had football. I had football equipment on, but I had never played an organized football game in my life, right? And when I finished playing basketball in 1975, it was four pro football teams that wanted me to seriously consider playing football, and the Dallas Cowboys was one of them. And Gil Grant wrote me a letter, and wanted me to seriously consider playing professional football by the way I played basketball. Mm-hmm. And I never really was a big Dallas fan. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I always thought I could play professional basketball. That's my phone.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Franklin, I'm really excited to hear this perspective that you've acquired over the years, and I'd like to, you know, step back a little bit and look at...
Hello? Hello? Hello?
I'd like to take a step back and just kind of go through some of your childhood experiences and what helped create that mentality and philosophy that you live by now.
Well, I think my family, you know, I mean, to grow up in a neighborhood where we grew up in, I was poor, and never really knew or realized I was poor until I look back on it. But yet, we utilized being poor to not be wasteful. Mm-hmm. I guess by being conscious of... Hello? Yes, ma'am. I was in the middle of that interview I told you I had to do this morning. Okay, toodaloo.
And are you referring to the neighborhood of Southwest?
Excuse me?
That neighborhood?
Oh, yeah, right where Prairie Park is. That's where...
What was the address? Do you remember? Or what road it was?
My grandmother lived at 2412 Street, and I lived at 3412 Street, Southwest. Right now, where Prairie Park, where the basketball court is, mm-hmm. They put the basketball court when they designed the park where I used to live at.
Oh, you're kidding. Okay.
Yeah, that's why the court is in that park. That's where I grew up at.
Okay.
In Prairie Park.
And when were you born in?
1952. I was born on 11th Street.
On 11th Street?
I mean, well, like, the house was on 11th Street, but I was born at Old Borough Hospital.
Okay. And you mentioned your mother. Was it just your mother?
My father died when I was 12. Okay. And my mother raised six kids, Miss Lorraine Franklin. And she put all of us through college. Except for one. My older brother did not want to go after Jefferson. He said he was tired of wrecking his brain. and so he just, you know, he always worked, you know. But all my other siblings, you know, went to college and graduated.
And your mom's name was?
Lorraine.
Lorraine. What was your dad's name?
Nathaniel C.
Nathaniel C.
Yeah. And Franklin.
And you're one of six, huh?
I was born right in the middle.
Oh, wow.
I grew taller than everyone else.
I bet they love that.
Oh, yeah. But, and you know, just right down here at Gray Bar, I don't know if you know where Gray Bar is. You know where Libby is on the corner?
Yeah, 12th and Salem.
Yeah, Gray Bar is right across the street from Libby.
Okay.
And right down behind Gray Bar is where I'm talking about. And we used to play football and in the back of Gray Bar, because they had a lot more room mm-hmm. in the back of the building. Mm-hmm. And we called it Gray Bar Stadium.
Was that what the neighborhood?
That's what the name of the building was.
What were you playing with?
Just neighborhood kids.
Okay. Were there a lot of kids out back then?
Oh, yeah. The whole neighborhood. I mean, it was just like different streets, and all the kids get together. And each person played a position.
What was your house like?
Oh, it was small. My three brothers, we all three guys in the same room, mm-hmm. and my sister stayed with my grandmother, mm-hmm. and you know, so we had pretty much upstairs, and then it was like, you know, like three beds in a room, and all the guys in the same room, and your parents had their room, their room was downstairs. It was compact, but and you had a chance to grow and really appreciate. In order to appreciate, I guess, the lives we have today, we had to go through the hard times of yesterday, and to appreciate the opportunity. And mainly the opportunities were very limited as far as. Plentiful on one hand, but as you look at the big picture, limited as far as getting the things that we throw away today. Yesterday, we used to where it wasn't nothing left, you know. I mean, and you used it because that's just the way it was, and the way if you wanted something, you looked at it from a different perspective versus throwing it in the trash can. Nah, we can still get some use out of that.
Can you give me a couple of examples of those?
Well, a pair of shoes with holes in them.
Okay.
You know, like you get a nut, either put some cardboard in it, or you put something in it until your parents could get some, mm-hmm. you know, could make it around to it, or they might get an older shoe and take it, cut it, and work with it, and then put it inside the shoe to where you got next to your feet. And you get, instead of putting one cardboard, you might have got a piece of leather, which served better. I mean, and then the shoe wearing out versus putting your feet on the ground versus some people walking around barefooted. Hmm. You know, and having one pair of shoes in the neighborhood. I mean, and just, you really didn't notice it because people walk around barefoot all the time in the summertime. And some of them probably didn't have shoes. We were always fortunate enough to have shoes, always fortunate enough to have clothes. I could never recall going hungry. Hmm. It was always food.
Even with six of you, huh?
With six of us, it was always food. My sister was telling me yesterday how mom would get a 50-pound bag of potatoes, 25 pounds of flour, and then so many pounds of sugar and just different ingredients, and made food from scratch. You know, and used to make bread. I mean, it was a bakery at Fifth Street, Kroger Bakery, and Marina Bakery. And my mom's bread, people, you know, used to come to the neighborhood, Miss Franklin, I want some of that bread. You know, just because she cooked it all the time, and I guess she got good at it. And I know this was back, I'm talking back in the 50s and 60s. So I asked her to make some bread in the 80s and 90s, and she used to try to make something. Must have forgot the recipe. but as times change, you know, you really look back at the food. That how the food was prepared, how much healthier, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as being sick, you know. I mean, if you had asthma, you got to take something and go out there. And this time of year, right here, your nose, you know, the allergies, and it was just something you stay in the house or put up with it or deal with it. Give him a rag or something to go around, blow his nose with, keep on going. And seeing kids being adventurous, we used to always just want to go out, you know, mm-hmm. come over here and play in the river.
So you went, now how far did you roam in that? I mean, you said you lived here locally, you know, at 12th Street, but where? How far were you able to roam?
Oh, on a bicycle, we went to North Camp up in Salem, out to Carvin's Cove.
That's a long way.
That's a long way on bicycles. I mean, we used to be able, I can recall going to Carvin's Cove on a bicycle, up Williamson Road. Up at Brookside, down, you know, up on a bicycle, going all the way to Hollins, up Reservoir Road, onto the Cove, on bicycle, and got a flat tire, and rode the bike back on a flat tire because it was a thumbtack in my tire. And I just got to ride it because I'm not going to walk. But it was just so many experiences. You know, I guess being adventurous and I guess not getting seriously injured, not getting seriously, being safe, always thinking safety enough to where it was always a level of safety in everything. I guess by being parents working for the railroad played an important part on safety with sports, safety, just thinking safety first. And then getting people around you to think the same way. You know, how safe is, you know, how safe is, you know, as a basketball official now, you know, if play get rough, stop it. Because if play got too rough versus stopping and then call an inadvertent whistle and then get the ball to somebody and then warn the players about, hey, player's getting too rough. If I'm, and that way you maintain a level of safety and control versus, well, let them play. No. If kids are learning, teach them the same way. I apply the same home training that I got to how I deal with people's kids, how I deal with people. I'm so like you and I right now, how we dealing with each other, you know, and it's a level of respect and appreciation versus whatever, you know.
You mentioned that safety aspect probably came from your folks working for the railroad. Were they both working for the railroad most of their lives? Or
My father retired. My grandfather retired from the railroad. My uncle retired from the railroad. And my father retired from the railroad.
Wow.
And so that...
So did your mom work for the railroad?
My mom worked as a lady to clean up houses. Mm-hmm. And then she got on as a nurse's assistant at the Veterans Hospital in Salem. And she retired from there after 29 years.
A long time.
Yeah, they called her Mama Franklin. Because she worked with all the patients, you know, really respected her opinion. And they called her Mama Franklin. Mm-hmm. And she's a good lady.
Damn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She had a reputation that superseded mine. Oh, yeah.
Well, you mentioned the food, too, in relation to your mom. Did you guys have a garden or anything
outside
of the
bakery? Had gardens up on we had several gardens, I guess, right over here on Norfolk Southern's property. Right now, the tracks have expanded to where the garden used to be. So, I mean, they're not taking no more of their right-of-way. Mm-hmm. Versus that one time, you know, we had a garden on their right-of-way. We went up there one summer and planted food. Came back the next summer and they just cut the whole everything away.
Oh, no.
About four. I mean, it was just part of the land put the new tracks in and expanded wide. And it's just progress. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just the way it was. And we was just using the dirt.
Did you have a garden after that anywhere?
Or? Oh yeah, my mother had one. You know, she always had a garden either around the house and even today I still grow tomatoes and.
I was going to ask if you had to help out with that.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I just, even right now, I enjoy just gardening and you know, and some of the vocational classes I learned at school, mm-hmm. like sheet metal, woodworking, and some of the objects that some of the furniture I made in high school, I still have myself.
Wow. Yeah, you know, good quality stuff.
Oh, yeah. I see, knowing what type of wood that was good wood and valuable and just making it right, having to put a project together to make a grade. Mm-hmm. You know, just pick something you like and just make it. Yeah. Pass the time and learn something in the process.
You mentioned that you were going to college as well. What did you end up majoring in?
Urban Affairs and Child Psychology.
So coming out of building furniture to urban affairs and jobs.
Yeah.
How did that transition occur?
Well, it's just something I felt, I've always thought about John Kennedy's words. Mm. You know those words, I don't. Mm. You know, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country or your community. And I felt I could best serve my community by reaching back and reaching back and kind of doing what I done and then look at it and say, hey man, you did your best. It was great, feeling good about it, and it's moving on.
That's excellent.
That's pretty much, you know, people help me even right now, 55 years old, from kindergarten at Jerusalem Baptist Church. And in the first year of school, I had to wait out of school a whole year because of my birthday. coming in November. And so I had to wait till I was 7 to start the first grade. Mm-hmm. So that first year they put me in a kindergarten. And some of the same guys I went to kindergarten with that I still know today.
Wow.
You know, we went all the way through school together. Yeah.
If I say Roanoke, Southwest,
right,
the neighborhood you grew up in, what are a couple of the images or thoughts that first come to mind?
Oh.
Anything in particular?
People.
How so?
Well, I say the people made just made each character as I write, you know, just do my, the people were in the, like each person had their own individual character, and the characters were just something you can't describe. Me, it's something that it's difficult to describe. Mm-hmm. On one hand, but on another hand, living it, you think about people, and then if you lived it, you know, you'd say, well, like my sister, we sit and talk and say, remember this person or that person? And they say, yeah, I remember that person. And you describe them, and they be talking about different characteristics about the person versus the person in the room have no idea you're talking about. They can't imagine it to try to paint a picture for the person. And your people, like some people were alcoholics, and we never knew they were alcoholics. It was people that were homosexuals. Like, everybody just dealt with them, you know, they were just who they were, and you people, and it's just like, that person this way, and you gave them names, and whatever, and just, you know, you had every kind of character in the neighborhood that exists today, but people just dealt with them different, you know, and it was just, hey, that's the way they are, that's, you know, and it's just, everybody pretty much did their thing, and left people alone, and left people sometimes overstep boundaries. But for the most part, everybody left each other alone and did their thing, and it was kind of confined on one hand, because you couldn't go to movie theaters. At one time you couldn't go, and next time you go to anyone you want to. It could seem like overnight, like a Burger King on Melrose Avenue. It was a Kenny's across the street. You couldn't go buy a hamburger. And then one day you couldn't buy a hamburger. The next day, they were glad to have your business. You know, and it just seemed like it was a transition overnight. And then the kids embracing the other kids. The kids embracing all the kids, as we grew closer together. Like some of the same people that I met, you know, black and white, I still had a day as friends. And to me, it's fun. You know, it's a very enjoyable, it's a humbling experience. To me, it's very humbling, because I could have very easily been incarcerated if not for people saying the right thing. If you do this or you do that, if you do the wrong thing, you go into jail. If you do the right thing, you go into college. And then sometimes you be right on the verge of doing the wrong thing, and you think for a second, you say, "Hey, this is gonna lead me here. This is gonna lead me there." I got to holler at y'all guys later. You know, and making that choice and bailing out versus staying, and even today, you know.